Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey friends, welcome to another edition of the Tennis and Bagels podcast. This is our first recording after the Australian Open. It was quite an intense, very exciting, multi-storylined week of tennis. And I'm excited to have on two guests. Well, I guess one of those is the host of this podcast, Andre. So Andre, how are you doing?
I'm good. That's my first time recording since the Australian Open, but I think Vansh had a super recording with Steve Flink, which is always a good listen. So go ahead and listen to that if you haven't yet. And Owen also had one, I believe, right? I'm not sure if it was before or after the Australian Open final. Actually, it was before, so never mind that. Vansh was the last one, but I'm here for the first time after the Australian Open. I've been doing good. Tournaments have been nice. We had some really good stories that we're excited to talk about today.
Great, fantastic. And there's no better guest to join me than one of my good friends from Talking Tennis. You should go check those guys out on YouTube. They're doing a really good job. And he's also a writer for, he's written in the past for a few different places, actually. And he's pretty active on social media as well. And we're excited to have on Jethro. So how are you doing, Jethro? If you want to maybe introduce yourself to the listeners, since this is the first time on Tennis and Bagels.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's good to be here. As Vansh said, my name's Jethro. Been following the game for, well, as long as I can remember, really. My kind of first concrete memories are around kind of 2005, 2006, 2007, when I kind of first saw Rafa Nadal playing. And I think I went from liking tennis to loving tennis when I first watched Rafa play. Winning those French Opens and then that 2008 Wimbledon final. It's kind of like my nostalgic tennis memory all those years ago. And I've just loved it ever since. And I think over the years, I've kind of just got more and more into it as kind of, as I've got older. And so social media has made it easier to access tennis content. I used to be on YouTube all the time watching tennis highlights. And Rafa Nadal was always my guy. And then 2016, I caught on to Dominic Thiem. And so it was kind of those two, and then Schwartzman, kind of around the same time. And I kind of had like a trio of favorite players at that point. And someone who's recently joined that brigade won a title this week, so we're very excited to chat about him.
Yeah, that's quite the origin story. It's cool that you've been a fan ever since 2005 and 2006, and kind of Nadal really is what started it for you. But tell us a little bit about your love for Argentinian tennis. What is it about players like Schwartzman and Baez? Do you see something in them that sort of makes you want to root for them, that you're super passionate about them and their results?
Yeah, it's quite a mix of things. I think growing up, I'm English, so I've grown up a big rugby fan, and I always really liked the Argentina rugby side. I saw they had such passionate fans, and I love the way that, they competed. And then it came to tennis, and I really liked Del Potro. I think every tennis fan ever is a fan of Del Potro. He's an absolute legend. And so I just always had kind of like a love and like for Argentinian sport. And then I was watching the 2016 Istanbul final between Schwartzman and Dimitrov. And I was quite a big fan of Dimitrov at this point. And I had no idea how tall Schwartzman is. I hadn't really, he was ranked around 60 at this time, so I didn't really know much about him. I'd just kind of seen him, in Grand Slam draws and stuff. And, partly thanks to a Dimitrov meltdown, Schwartzman ended up winning that final and took the title, and they shook hands. And I was like, God, how short is this guy? Because I'm very short myself. I'm not 5'7", like same height as Schwartzman. And I was like, oh, I can't even use the excuse that I'm not a good tennis player anymore because of my height. Because look at this guy, he's winning titles on the main tour. And so that definitely helped. And then I kind of just saw his competitive attitude and like he's a really sweet guy. I loved his backhand, the way he just competes for everything, and he's just maximized his career so well. And then, you know, I was watching like a clay court challenger kind of midway through 2021. And I saw another 5'7" Argentinian guy, like, you know, with this insanely massive forehand. And I was like, gosh, I got another one to root for now. And yeah, it's that's kind of part of why, because I kind of relate to them quite a lot. And I know, having played tennis, how tough it is when there's like something like such bigger guys just like smashing balls down at you. And not having like your own advantages is tough. And that just makes me respect those two so much, you know. And like any short guy, you know, there's players who've done really, really well who are kind of like, you know, 5'8" to 5'10" range. And I just find that so impressive, you know, when you're so disadvantaged in a sport where 6 foot plus is kind of the ideal height.
Yeah. And on that note, just like to round up, Vansh, how tall are you? I think I've thought about this like before, but you used to play juniors, and you had some potential, but you have to be at least like 6 foot tall, right?
Yeah, I mean, when I was playing, when I was at my best, I was between age 14 and 16. I was around 5'9". I'm about 5'10" right now,
Oh,
5'11" on a good day. But it's,
okay.
yeah, I always consider myself a short tennis player as well.
Yeah, it do fall on the shorter side because like a lot of tennis players like around like 6 to 6 foot 2, 6 4 even. But yeah, I'm about 5'9" as well. So like I can relate to the idea of like, man, if Schwartzman has been able to become a top 10 and even like reach the ATP finals, and I had a dream I've said about like a few times in this podcast before. Like I really wanted to become a tennis player, like a professional, and to see that Schwartzman is doing well, I'm like, maybe with a couple inches taller, maybe I would have been able to like go even farther than him, maybe top 5 or something. I don't know, but yeah, look, it's the land of the dreams, and I think it's a really good inspiration story as well. It might be, I don't know if you know of any interviews with Baez where he maybe has said that Schwartzman maybe have inspired him to become better, but since they're about the same height, but yeah.
Yeah, I've never actually heard that. I mean, he's only 8 years younger, so I guess maybe it helped. But it's weird, isn't it? I mean, I heard Jack Draper say that Dominic Thiem's one of his idols, and I'm like, what? Like Dominic Thiem? Like, oh, yeah, he's only 30 now, I suppose. But like, I never really know where they get their idols from, because I, the generation coming through, I imagine idolized kind of like Djokovic, Federer, Nadal, Murray kind of years. And Schwartzman only really broke through, you know, 2016, 2017 time. But yeah, like he probably was inspired, but I imagine like Baez is quite an exciting player, you know, to keep an eye on at the moment, I think. And I think that's going to inspire a lot of people in Argentina for sure, who are kind of around that height. And, you know, no matter what certain tennis players on Twitter have to say about on clay court tennis, you know, you can have a very good career being an amazing clay court player. And yeah, you can just work on your game on other surfaces, but it's a great start, you know, if you're looking for inspiration from those two.
I mean,
Yeah, I can.
you can win as many Grand Slams as Pete Sampras only on clay, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. I quite really enjoy watching this time of the year with this clay court circuit in South America. I just get to learn so much more about these players, and maybe players who don't get quite the same respect. You know, your Albert Ramos Vinolas of the world, you know, obviously your Baez and your Schwartzman and so many other players in that same sort of realm between like 20 to 80 in the world. And I just feel like it's such an underappreciated swing, just because you know, you also have the European indoors and you have Dallas and Del Rey and you have the Middle East as well coming up. But this time of the year is pretty exciting, and you get some absolute thrillers that go way down to the wire. And I mean, you had some three setters this week, and you had players like Correa and Baez and everyone really coming through in Buenos Aires, and now they're going to take that form into Rio. But watching Baez this week, obviously he's been not in great form in the last 6 or 7 months. I mean, really since the post clay court circuit after Wimbledon of last year. So, you know, what did you see in his game, sort of in the matches that you saw that he played this week, that you know, that you would say, okay, he's sort of back to the bias that we know, and back to his best. We did see some flashes, obviously, last year against, played a great match against Carlos for two sets at the US Open. But what really stood out, you mentioned his forehand, which is obviously a really big weapon.
Yeah, no, his forehand was a lot more accurate. Because, he hits with so much pace. He's like such an aggressive player. And I think it was just all kind of all at once, kind of a big amalgamation last year where, we had that amazing run in Bestad and he beat Rublev and Thiem, and then he got to the final and he lost to Cirundolo. And then he had to go play hard courts and he got some really awful draws, and he got like Alcaraz, US Open, he got Korda, he got Fritz, he got Kyrgios, like all in these first rounds, they were playing really, really well. And when you've got such little hard court experience and such a change in conditions from what you've been playing, it was always going to be difficult. But he did have a tough time, kind of adapting. He was missing a lot. He wasn't serving very well. And I think that's, for me, I've been most impressed with this week is the serve. Like, he's serving really big, especially for someone his size. And I need to try and find out how many aces he hit this week, but it was a lot. And yeah, there were dips, in his second round match against, I think, Barrios Vera. He played a pretty poor second set and dropped that one, and then played really well against Delian, and then final against Corey again, he starts spraying lots of errors, but he kind of just found his form again. And I think when he went through these kind of patches of, spraying errors and not playing well in the second half of last season, everything was moving so quick because it was on a hard court. He didn't really have time to adjust and like set himself and get going again. Whereas I think he's so comfortable and confident on the clay, and he was at home in Argentina, he could just mentally reset if he had played a bad set. And yeah, I think that's just the being comfortable on clay again was massive. But yeah, no, his forehand was really, really incredible. And like, his backhand doesn't really get a lot of, like, it doesn't get talked about, but the way he kind of pushes off the backhand when he's kind of, looks like he's worked himself into a tight spot where the racket's kind of like too close to his body. He has this insane kind of drive from his left arm, just pushing the ball through, and it gets him out of a lot of situations. And I think, yeah, he's just so skilled. He's got good net skills. But yeah, just a really positive week overall.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty good analysis, actually, of his game and his strengths, and, also what he was able to do this week. You mentioned the serve. I mean, I'm looking at the stats now. He had at least five aces in almost every match except for the final. Mm. But his first serve percentage was quite high in the final, and he was getting quite a lot of payoff. In addition, we know how solid of a mover he is and how great his ground game is and his court coverage. And you mentioned the explosiveness. That's what really stands out about his game. I mean, the way he's able to sort of slide into the corners on the backhand and then get the forehand that he wants and then kind of dictate from there, from the middle of the court. And he really maximizes everything out of that shot. I mean, obviously you mentioned Schwartzman and his backhand. For Baez, it's the forehand. And it's like, you have two players with such formidable weapons like that, firepower for firepower, pound for point, pound for pound, they hit the ball so big off of those two wings. It's really quite something to watch, actually.
Yeah. I must confess, I didn't get to watch the final yesterday, but I do remember seeing him playing against Alcaraz last year, and it didn't strike me that he was that small just because he hits so hard. And it felt like he was going toe-to-toe against Alcaraz, and I believe he got injured right in that match.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Into the third set, I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, and he was done. But I think this match could have gone places if he was fully fit, so... That was just so I guess like I can get a picture of like how much better he must be also on clay, where he's more comfortable. The serve isn't that much of a liability, so he can maximize his game as well on the baseline. So I'm gonna try to catch this match later on and make some comments on Twitter about it. But definitely looking forward as well for his next few matches on clay and back on hard as well. I feel like if he gets a good good season, like in South America and Central America, he can go to Indian Wells like with a little bit more confidence. Of course, the conditions are pretty much completely different. Like in Indian Wells, is a lot drier. Although it's probably about as hot as it is in South America, but it's just the dryness of the conditions, I think, is going to make the ball.
It makes
the ball also drive a little bit faster, right? As well,
yeah, it's like faster through the air, and then
yeah,
you know, once it hits the ground, it slows down, but it's really, you know, he'll get the effect of the high bounce, and he'll be able to, I think he'll have more time, especially on his ground strokes, and he'll be able to, he can especially do some damage from the baseline those conditions. But, you know, before we move on from Cordoba, since there was a lot of other action this week, what are sort of your takeaways from the rest of the field there? Or maybe your impressions of where Diego is at right now? Because obviously, he's struggling a little bit more than we're used to in the past from previous seasons. I think he played pretty well at the U.S. Open, you know, pushing Tiafoe there, breaking his serve, I think, six times and getting to the third round. I thought that was a good effort. But since then, he's been struggling a little bit. So what's your kind of take on that?
Yeah, I mean, it was a bit of a car crash into the season for Diego. There was just no rhythm or confidence in any of his matches. And then he has a big off season. You know, he just gets away from tennis for a bit, goes to the World Cup, goes traveling with his girlfriend, and he just seems really refreshed. And then he's like practicing again. And then he starts the season and he gets injured in the first match against Brooksby in Auckland. And, you know, he's in tears on court. It's just like, oh my God, come on. Like, this is the last thing I need. And then, yeah, Australian Open, I mean, he was barely fit. You know, he managed to just about scrape past his opening round with the qualifier, Krutik. And then, yeah, I caught the highlights of his match with Wolf, and he played some good tennis, but you could tell he was just trying to shorten points and just try and flatten the backhand out, because like he wasn't kind of stretching on the backhand side because of his left leg. He wasn't defending well at all because he couldn't move properly. And then, you know, a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks off after Australian Open, and then he enters this week. And I watched the first set with Juan Manuel Cirundolo, and he was, the forehand looked good. The backhand was kind of a shot that I was a bit disappointed in. The forehand was looking better than I thought it had been in recent times, but he's just making too many errors, you know, in kind of like sort of standard play. You know, there's too many trading shots that are just going into the net or going out. He's not got the rally tolerance he used to have at the moment. And I think, you know, that's going to be down to a confidence and rhythm thing. And then he did say afterwards that his father's been in the hospital for the last 3 weeks. And I think that's been tough for him to deal with. He's just got a lot going on. And, you know, he's been Argentina's highest ranked player for years. You know, he was in the top 10, he's in the top 20, top 30 for all this time. And now he's dropped out the top 30 and he's defending points in Rio and Buenos Aires, where he reached the final, both of them last year. And I think it's just a lot for him to take right now. And he's getting more frustrated than I've seen him get before. It's just not coming as easy as it used to. And I hope that he can, you know, sort it out and get back to winning ways, because he's a really, really great player to have on tour when he's doing well. He's brings such a good, happy vibe to everyone. But yeah, I will say for his good friend, Federico Coria, had a fantastic week. And he's working with Carlos Bloch now, which I hadn't realized until yesterday. And looks like that partnership's working really, really nicely. I thought he played really well in the second set against Byers. He played a pretty poor first set. And then third set, they were both playing pretty well. Third set, they both playing well. And yeah, I thought it was a good week for him. I always enjoy watching Corey. He's such a grinder. You know, his defense is really, really good. Disappointing for Francisco Cirundolo. He hasn't looked the same player at all since he won that title in Busch either. Yeah, I think
he was struggling a little bit with an injury as well, right?
Yes.
To pull out.
I can't remember what it was, but
yeah.
I remember watching his first round US Open match with Murray, which Murray won in straight sets. And I just think, a guy of your size and your frame, you need a bigger serve than you've got. He kind of rolls it in half the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all very well having a great forehand of that size, but if you aren't going to have a big serve as well, you know, you need to up that. And yeah, Ramos Vinolas, I think, yeah, went out to Korea. Probably a bit disappointing from him, but yeah, so the draw opened up, and then Byers was the heavy favourite once they went out. And, you know, he took this opportunity really, really well.
Yeah, second career title. I mean, it's quite good. He's one of those 2000-born players, and he's probably going to have many more awesome results. But I guess moving away from the South American swing, let's talk a little bit about Dallas, because obviously you have the fantastic story with Yiving Wu for those who don't know, Yiving Wu, the 2017 US Open Juniors champion, won both the singles and the doubles there. He's about 23 years of age as of right now, born in 1999. You know, this is the first ever male player in the Open era, first any player, actually, you know, male player like in the Open era to win an ATP title from China. So it's been kind of a long time coming, I guess. And he's, you know, this time last year, he was outside the top 1200 and he absolutely tore it on the Challenger Tour year last year. But between 2019 and 2022, he had this 3-year hiatus with lots of injuries, a couple surgeries in there as well. And obviously you have the COVID pandemic pause and not being able to travel outside of China or play any tournaments outside of his kind of region. And so it's been great to see someone with his sort of drive and work ethic. And obviously the game speaks for itself. This week, taking out players like Shapovalov and then beat Michael Moe as well, who beat Zverev in the Australian Open. And then the last two wins I thought were very impressive against Fritz, who's a top 8 player. And then against someone like Isner, who has so much experience at this level, having played 30 plus finals and, you know, playing at home in Dallas, and one of the most incredible serving performances of Isner's career. And he still couldn't get it done in the end because Yiming Wu, if you haven't seen him, he's super exciting to watch. He takes the ball extremely early. He hugs the baseline. He's able to, like, his play from the baseline is pretty remarkable, how he can just inject pace off both wings. He moves extremely well. I think the serve can get better for sure, but he also has, what I like about his game is he's got quite a good IQ as well. He can really hit those angles, that particularly that sharp forehand cross court angle is what really stands out to me. And I really like his demeanor, and he's pretty calm, you know, hardworking, and he's got a good sense of humor as well. If you've seen some of those post-match clips with Blair Henley, shout out to her because she did an awesome job this week being the MC and doing the on-court interviews. I think she's one of the best in the game at them. But since you guys, you know, both would have seen Wu play this week, what are sort of your general impressions of his game, and how excited are you by him? Any one of you can go first. Yeah, Andre, if you want to take it away.
Yeah. So I watched most of the final yesterday. I missed the first set, but I thought it was impressive how complete his game is. Like his serve is, I mean, there's always room for improvement everywhere, right? But like, I thought he was really good, like everywhere. Like he could serve and get himself out of trouble with his serve. He could back it up with like a 1-2 punch. He could move well on the baseline. He could defend really well. At some point, he was like defending off to the forehand side, of, like with his lighting forehand. It almost reminded me of Djokovic at times, just the way that he was playing and defending and turning like attack and defense into attack. So I really liked how I was really impressed just how almost unfazed he looked by being in the final. He just looked like he'd been there like a many time before. Maybe he was just telling himself this is just like any other final. Like I've been in a challenger event. Some challenger events do have like some big crowds coming in. So he may have just kind of tried to like erase the ATP tour like from his head and just like actually playing the tennis. But yeah, like I wouldn't expect him to win it. And especially in 3 tie breaks that he has to play against John Isner. So that was pretty massive for him to hold his own against John Isner in Dallas. He saved 4 match points. I'm excited for him. Like if he can keep up this level, like I don't think he's going to drop. Maybe he's going to have like a little dip, like sometimes it happens, but given that he's been doing so well in the challengers and then he's won a title this week, I think he's going to get better. I feel like he may, so far I would say he has a level for like top 30, top 20 even, like if he can keep maximizing his game. I do wish that obviously like he was playing a lot more conservative on pressure points, especially towards the end. So like his forehands were a lot shorter. He was still like producing angles, but he was not really pacing like his forehand, like hitting through it as much. So I can see that more experienced players would be able to, like a Rublev, for example, would have been able to punish him for that. But I mean, he won the title, so there's only more confidence for him. So I don't think it's going to get worse from this point on. Like I think it's only on him now. I guess he's got so much potential. Like I feel like we could see him becoming like a good top 20 player, like even dark horse for like the big events like in Indian Wells, Miami, like who knows.
Yeah, no, I was really impressed. I because I was watching caught up so much this week. I didn't really catch much of Dallas, but I did watch the final. And yeah, Isner's serving was ridiculous. It was well frustrating from someone because I wanted to watch, you know, I wanted to watch his ball striking, you know, in these tie breaks, and you know, we just weren't really getting any of that. And in the final set tie break, I don't know how many he hit, but I only counted like one unforced error, and that was when he had match point on his serve. Like, all the other points were just Isner serving huge. Yeah, he's so solid. I love how early he takes the ball. Kind of very punchy shots. It kind of reminded me a bit of like a Nishikori kind of, and I think that's partly because the ATP did share a video of, you know, Wu, like, you know, it was like the post match handshake of Wu and Nishikori in 2018, and I was like, oh my gosh, that, I feel like I kind of remember that. God, that was, can't believe it was that long ago, and he's still only 23. Yeah, and I was just like, God, this guy just slipped off my radar entirely, and then. Obviously, the people who follow the Challenger circuit now know all about him. And so another point of evidence to watch more Challengers whenever you get the chance. Because, I mean, these guys saw, like, you know, some amazing stuff at the Australian Open. Although, you know, it's kind of like JJ Wolf, Ben Shelton, I already knew about them quite well.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's always fun when someone breaks through like that. And, yeah, he's very cool, very calm, just mentally dealt with the pressure in that final really well.
Yeah.
And he seems like a really charming, nice guy. And yeah, he seems like a great addition to the tour.
Yeah, that's all really well said, I guess. A little bit about the match itself. I mean, three tie breaks you mentioned, obviously he came back from a set down. He had to save championship point in the second set as well. Because that looked like it was going to go to a tie break, which it eventually did. But Isner had a look to finish this match 7-6, 7-5. Wu saves that incredibly calm and composed, some big serving and followed by a big first strike. But what impressed me is that when they actually went into the rallies, Wu had a significant edge. Because, I mean, obviously, if you're just straight up looking at the stats, you see in this match that Isner hit 60 winners, but then you realize 44 of those are aces. And he made 21 unforced errors, and one of those was a double fault. So if you actually take the serve out of the equation and you go past two shots, you're looking at, you know, 16 winners and 20 unforced errors for Isner. That's a -4 ratio, and he was... You know, and then you're looking at points all over the place, like from the baseline, from the net. So he had 16 winners, 20 unforced errors. Wu, on the other hand, he had 41 winners, but only 7 of those are aces. So that tells you that the majority of that is coming from the ground or at net or drop shots, overheads, whatever it might be. And he made 17 unforced errors. So he had a +19 winners to unforced errors ratio, while John had a -4, you know, winners to unforced ratio, if you're taking the serve out of the equation. And what impressed me is that he's got some pretty nice touch and feel at the net as well. He won 13 out of 13 of his net points, which in a match, you know, this big, you don't get that many opportunities to come to the net when you're facing that big serve of Isner and his imposing first forehand. But when he was up there, he was really quite efficient. And I think, you know, Isner had one of the best serving days of his life. Like 44 aces for him is a record in any three-set match. He's never hit more. And so for Wu to come on top in a match like that, where Isner has so much experience in this big stage, this was his 31st ATP final, and this was Wu's first.
Yeah.
So in a situation like that, you're really still back Isner when it comes to like handling the nerves and situations like that. And Isner, he missed some easy shots in that third set tiebreak. He had this one like sitter volley on the forehand that he just sort of, you know, came just sort of jammed. You know, just kind of got jammed as he was trying to put it away, and it was just a miscalculation on his part. Yeah. But Wu was just terrific in all the big moments, and you know, he did the same against Fritz as well. Fritz, as we know, is one of the best ball strikers on tour, and off both wings, off forehand, backhand, he has one of the best serves as well. Top 8 player for a reason, right? And Wu, you know, out baselined him as well, which was really impressive. I mean, he was, you know, in both these matches against Fritz and Isner. The opponent who lost won more total points and hit more aces. But when it came to the baseline exchanges, I think even Fritz in that match, he was like, he hit 18 winners and 18 unforced errors. But Wu, on the other hand, like 28 winners, 13 unforced errors. So, you know, +15. And it's like, you know, that's where I feel like he's really, really having the edge, because he's holding his own and he's defending so well in these exchanges. And then he's able to go on attack. And it's like, you know, it's terrific. And he saved all 9 break points against Fritz. Fritz was 0-9. And in that match, Fritz had several chances to win that match in straights as well. But Wu was just so clutch every single time. So I'm impressed. And sometimes when you have a young guy at this stage, it can either go two ways. They can get overwhelmed by the occasion, or they can just raise their game because they have no baggage, no scar tissue whatsoever, ever having been in these situations. So I think it's only up and up for Gur from here.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, we saw something like this a little bit with sort of Karatsev, but Karatsev was a little bit older and he'd been on the Challenger Tour a lot longer. And he'd sort of, he had that one Australian Open semifinal, and then he won Dubai. And he sort of, then he beat Djokovic at the start of the clay court season in Belgrade. And he wasn't really able to continue that form and hasn't really been the same player in over a year. But with Wu, I just wish he stays healthy. That's the number one thing.
Yeah,
because,
that's true.
I mean, we need someone like that. With, you know, China is such a big market for tennis, as we know, right? So it would be really awesome to have a male player, you know, be contending for like the biggest titles. And I think Wu has the potential to do that. So I'm very excited about his future.
Yeah. Just one thing about the final as well that I remember just now is the when you guys are talking about like how great a serving day Isner was having, the one thing that was, I think, was remarkable for me is like how he would shrug off like the aces. He would just like walk to the other side. It's almost, I think the coach must have said to him like, listen, it's John Isner. There's no way you're gonna get out of there like with at least like 20 aces on his back. There's just no way. So like, but whenever he got his racket on a return, there were so many that just came back, and he rarely ever made a return like error. Like when he actually got like in position to hit like a good forehand or backhand, he just went in, and it was a good return. It wasn't even a bad one. So in a big way, credit Isner to like, well, do well on those returns and even win a few. But there was, I think, in a tiebreaker. I don't know. I think it was the point that he won to break, not to win the match, but the first mini break that he got to get match point before he got broken back. He hit like Isner hit like a serve down the tee on Ad's side to Wu's forehand, and it wasn't his best serve. It was too very pacey, but like Wu just like hit his insane just. Almost like, as I said, like Djokovic and like forehand is like a very short swing and it just lands right on Isner's feet. And I was just looking at this and I was like, how can this guy do this like at this stage of the match still and do so well with those shots? Like, I feel like, I don't know, man. I feel like it can either be like beginner's luck. I don't think it is because, well, we've been just talking about like the challenger the whole time, but yeah, like if he stays healthy, he doesn't necessarily get, if he doesn't like, raises his expectations too high and just like finds himself like disappointed and frustrated, I think he can do really well this year. I'm definitely thinking he finishes the year like top 20, like if this keeps going.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah. You know, I was really impressed by, yeah, like pretty much everything, his whole package and his composure. But, you know, even aside from these three players that we've mentioned in Dallas, I was really impressed by JJ Wolf as well. Because obviously, you know, he had a big Australian Open as well, getting to the second week, the fourth round there, I think. And then, you know, he had his chances to beat Isner, but wasn't to beat, but he played a fantastic week as well. He beat Tiafoe. And I love that slice curve serve that he's able to hit on both the tee and the ad. It's just ridiculous because I haven't seen anything like that before. I've seen people compare it to Pete Sampras, but I haven't seen that kind of consistency off that wicked slicer, and it's basically going well into the deuce court every time he hits it on the outside, and it's just curving
it's
away
ridiculous.
From
ridiculous, right? I had to like check to see if he wasn't standing like on the other side, like when he hit that, because it was just, I couldn't believe it. I gasped when you put that on Twitter. I was like, what?
Yeah, mental. It was. Yeah. Yeah,
me too.
yeah,
I couldn't believe it. Like, I mean, I thought like players that come to mind, but that have like a good slicing serve. I think Murray's slice serve is pretty solid. I think Kyrgios, somebody mentioned, and on our account, like, has a pretty good slice serve. But that was insane. Like the curve is almost unnecessary. It's like it doesn't need to go that far, but it does.
It's so cruel, honestly. Yeah. Like, I don't know how you return that. It's like you can't really read it or prepare for it.
By the time you would hit awesome. Like the backboard, it was on the middle of the service of the service box from the other side. It's like,
yeah, it feels almost unfair to have that in your arsenal, if I'm being honest. But yeah, I mean, so Del Rey was a great tournament, and obviously we have more. With I mean, Dallas was a great tournament, and now we have Del Rey this week. But I guess shifting over to Jannik Sinner winning his seventh ATP title. I mean, this is obviously he won four of them in 2021. And last year he kept putting awesome results, getting to the quarters and kept getting to quarters, semis, you know, and just couldn't really finish the run. And he's been losing to some of the best players. I mean, Tsitsipas and 6-3 in the fifth at the Australian Open. And then obviously those matches against Djokovic and one of the best matches against Carlos last year at the US Open. And he's achieved quite a bit already at such a young age. We know what a great talent he is and, you know, how he's in that same next generation with Alcaraz and touted to win many big titles. But for him to get on the board this week, granted, he only had to play three matches because, you know, from quarters, semis onwards. And Cressy had a very good week getting to the final, but Sinner was really big, played really well in all the big moments and got it done. So I'm excited to see what Sinner can do now, having put together some good results this year already. So I'm excited to see what's in store for him. Do you guys see any of Sinner this week?
I didn't catch him. No, I mean, I was keeping up to date with the results. Yeah, kind of a tournament I would have expected him to win, but still thought it was impressive. And, you know, no sets dropped from Sonego, Phils, and Arthur Phils, great talent to keep an eye on as well. That was an awesome week from him. And then, yeah, Cressy in straight sets, you know, with a break in the second. So a good week for Sinner. I'm pretty big on Sinner. I think I have fairly high expectations on him. Not expectations, but there is, you know, I can see him going very deep in every slam. He's one of the best players, you know, at least from his generation and the middle generation across all surfaces. And he could make second week of every single Grand Slam this year, and I'd not be surprised at all. He's awesome. And yeah, and like you mentioned, the Tsitsipas and the Djokovic and the Alcaraz matches that he's lost, you know, these are all to very, very good players who are playing really, really well in tournaments that they are good at. So it's like there's a lot to come from Sinner, I think, this year. And yeah, definitely a very good start, not dropping any sets in his first, you know, in his first title of the year.
Yeah. Hopefully he can just stay healthy, you know, and, you know, get one of those big wins because he's come so close to beating these top five players. And, you know, it's just a little bit more needed, but I feel like he's very close. He's on the brink, I think.
I think I caught a bit of his match against Sonego, and the one thing that's coming to my mind is just Sinner he's reached the point where sort of like a Rublev type of point, like in the sense that like he is able to beat anybody that is like ranked lower than him. I don't expect him to not lose against anybody that is not in the top 10 at this point, essentially. I think the one thing that holds him back still is his serve. Like, that was one point in the Sonego match. I believe that I think it was up match point. He got 40 love up, and he could almost got turned that into a 40-40, like a deuce game, because it ended up being like 40-30. One serve that he's hit at 40 love, it wasn't even on the doubles alley. It was so far off. I couldn't believe how far that first serve was. And it's like, dude, you shouldn't be serving as badly as this. Like, at any point in your match at this point, like, you miss a first serve, that's okay. But, like, you miss this badly, there's no way you don't see a problem with this. Like, seriously. I'm not sure if this is the reason why he's lost to Alcaraz. Like, that was the few points where Alcaraz even should have beaten him in four sets instead of five. But regardless, I think if he can get good in his serve, in the sense that, like, he can rely on it to, like, finish his matches or like get himself out of trouble from time to time, and consistently do so, I think he can, he has any potential as anyone on tour. Like, I mean, there's no short of big titles that he couldn't win. He's reached the maybe at least one final, or is it two finals on the Masters 1000 level?
Yeah, he had that one against
in Miami.
Miami
against Hurkacz.
Lost to Hurkacz.
Yeah,
but that's the only final he's lost, and he's like cleaning it up everywhere else.
Yeah,
250s and 500s, and
so yeah, I feel like in terms of beating the big guys, like the ones that he should be he should be competing against most often, I think. Yeah, I got the serve done, and like I feel like the win's gonna come. Like, there's no way. Like, if many players that have, I guess, like less potential than he does, like if you put it this way, like has a bit more limitations in their games, they were able to get the wins. They were able to like cross the lines. There's no way Sinner won't cross that line before. Even Isner, for example, like he's won a Masters 1000, reached a couple more in his lifetime, and with his type of game, Milos Raonic, same yeah. difference, if you will. Like he's been able to reach as high as number three in the world, finalist at Wimbledon.
I honestly think he can win a Masters this year.
Sorry?
I think it's pretty. I think that should be a good goal for him this year.
Yeah,
like winning the Masters, getting to a major semi. I think he should be a contender for Turin as well.
Yeah, he should. He should really look into trying to qualify this year.
Yeah, I kind of have expectations
with
well
like
this year.
Yeah, I think it's weird with Sinner because some matches I think his serve looks really really good. And you know, like there was points against,
especially when he's down in some of these games. I've seen him like left 40, just boom, 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 get to deuce.
He did that against Tsitsipas, didn't he? You know, he's some amazing holds of serve, and he can serve big. It's just not consistent enough, and you know that kind of told in that final set against Tsitsipas in Australia, where he played one bad service game. Tsitsipas got a hold of some returns, and he kind of just crumbled. But he's very, 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 very good off the ground. Like the way he strikes the ball is just incredible. I think targeting a Masters 1000 this year is definitely a good one to go for. I think, and I think it's definitely achievable.
Obviously, you know, him and Runa and Alcaraz, two, three really awesome talents, along with Felix and a lot of other great players in this kind of group. So we'll see what's to come. I think they're all playing in Rotterdam this week, and that'll be really exciting. We could get another potential Sinner Tsitsipas right away in the I think in the second round. It's kind of a brutal draw because it's so packed. But
I'll be watching that for sure if that happens.
Yeah. I mean, so and then obviously, you know, you have the WTA events going on in the Middle East. And Bench is just really having a phenomenal year because she's ever since she's hired to meet Dmitry Tursunov, and I think she won the did she win the Billie Jean King Cup? I think they did, right?
Yeah, they did.
They won the Billie Jean King Cup last year. So since then, she's looked really, really good. She's won 16 of her last 18 matches.
I think she beat Leila Fernandez for the first time.
Yeah, and I think she bageled her in the first set. Is that right? And then they had a really good second set.
I believe so. I think it was 6-love, 7-5.
Yeah. I remember seeing that.
It wasn't a very competitive first set, that's for sure. It was a 6-1, a 6-love, but yeah.
And then she played Swiatek really tight, I think, at the United Cup, like two pretty tight sets. Yeah. And then she ended up winning Adelaide 2. And then she lost to Sabalenka in the fourth round of the Australian Open, the eventual champion. And she was even up a break in the first set. It was a good first set. And then Sabalenka really ran away with it. And then now she's won this title, another 500. And so I think, like, besides from her and besides from Arina and Rybakina and, you know, Iga before the AO, like, she's been the best player this year, like, third best. Really, she's won, and obviously she has an Olympic medal. And this final against Samsonova was really like out of her control for like the first two sets almost, because she loses that first set 6-1, and then she's down and out. Looks like in the tie break, she was up a break in the second set, but then Samsonova quickly got it back, and she has so much firepower. Samsonova, she hits the forehand so big, like one of her best shots period I've ever seen on the WTA right now. And it was really kind of rocking Bencic back, because we know how good of a pace absorber Bencic is and how well she sort of redirects pace. And that's like one of her biggest strengths. But against even the firepower of Samsonova, she really wasn't able to do that and was mistiming a lot of shots early on. And Samsonova just sort of ran away with the first set. And then in the second set, Samsonova was up 6-4 in the in the tiebreak and had another championship point, I believe, at 8-7 in the tiebreak. And Bencic clawed the way back, played those points really well. Got a little help from a net cord on the third one, but once she took that second set and then was up a break in the third, she really like wrestled the match. I thought it was really kind of a steal because Samsonova was really the better player for like the first two sets, and yeah, Bencic is just riding that wave of confidence right now. So be interesting to see because I
Yeah.
always look at her do so well, and she's won 2 1000s, she's won Olympic gold, she's beaten so many of the best players, she has such a great record against top players, and then at majors apart from the US Open she's really like not done well. Like you look at her record, it's like hasn't made a quarterfinal in the other three majors. It feels like she's massively underachieving in that regard. And then in the US Open she came really close against Andreescu in that semifinal in 2019. That was a really good match between her and BB, and went on to play Serena. So, but apart from that, she's only 25. She feels like the oldest 25-year-old to me because she's been on the tour for like 10 years. But yeah, I'm just kind of waiting to see like when will those results translate to the majors because she's so good outside of them.
Yeah, I think I kind of put her in a similar boat to Zverev in a way because they both won Olympic gold in 21, and they
Yeah.
both did really, really well in non, well, no, most quite a lot of the time they do really well in non-major titles. And obviously, Zverev does really well at Masters 1000s. And then at Slams, he's just underperformed his whole career. Some could certainly argue he gets found out a bit because if he doesn't serve really well, his kind of lack of power can really get exposed in the best of five format.
Yeah.
But Bencic doesn't really have that excuse because it's best of three all the way. So I think, yeah, I don't know if it's mental or if it's because he faces tougher players. Obviously, Sabalenka was not an easy match at all, and Sabalenka, see the eventual champion. Once she rescued that break in the first set, it just looked like one way traffic from there on. But yeah, as you said, she's a really good pace absorber. I think she's a really clean ball striker. I don't know what major I see her winning though. This is a thing. I think we've got
Yeah.
Iga as the Roland Garros kind of stalwart for the next 10 years, you'd think. Maybe someone else will challenge her at some point. Wimbledon, I kind of see Rybakina and Sabalenka kind of being the main two favourites there going forward. US, kind of anyone's game, I suppose. Swiatek, seen defending champion. Ons is always going to be there. I don't think I have Bencic as a, oh, she should win this title one day. I think
Oh, like
that's
in
where
terms
I'm
of
stuck.
winning a slam, yeah,
Yeah, I
same.
don't know what slam I see her winning. Maybe the Australian Open, but yeah, it's I can't, I haven't worked that out yet, personally.
Yeah, like in a way, the Australian Open from the women's side for me is sort of how the US Open is for the men's side. Is where the, I don't want to say random, but like you know what I mean, like the where the one-timers end up like winning their slams. Caroline Wozniacki won the day, like Sabalenka just won one. I could see it like going into Bencic's hands, but like she's 25. Like I couldn't believe that when you told me I had to check this up. Like I still can't. Like in my head she was like 27, 28. Because
She was a really
wow.
prodigious junior. Like she had like I remember her beating Serena in like 2015, and just before Serena was going for the
Yeah,
Calgary.
that's about like when I remember like her coming up like in 2015-ish. So man, that's
And she won that Toronto tournament. She was like 18 at the time.
yeah.
So it's like
And at that point she already felt like she was like older, like in a sense. Like it feels like, oh yeah, she's coming up. Like she's like and you felt like she was like 22 when she did it at that time. But yeah, no. Man. Yeah, no, she has a long career ahead of her still.
yeah, I guess there are some possibilities, but in terms of like being a tier one contender, I don't really kind of put her in that bracket of like Iga and Sabalenka, Rybakina, like just quite yet. I think she doesn't have like that natural weapon firepower. Like really, like she kind of deflects your pace and turns it on you. But there's not one real like I don't think her serve is one of the best. She definitely doesn't have like I've seen the second serve sort of let her down in the past. In big moments, or like she doesn't really quite have that killer, like one killer shot that I think you need to win some of these big titles. But I think on the mental side, she's definitely in. That's where I saw the most scope for improvement. I think she'll probably maximize that maybe with Tursunov in her corner, but we'll see because yeah, I mean, there'll be some opportunities somewhere, but it's especially if Iga loses early in one of these hardcourt slams, or yeah, like the draw can just sort of open up in unique ways, but she's just someone else to sort of keep an eye on, because yeah, the consistency is definitely there outside of the slams, I would say. But yeah, I mean, and these 500 tournaments are just jam-packed, like, because they don't, like, I think they have this rule on the WTA that you can only, like, only one top 10 player can play in a 250, and you're only allowed to play two the whole year.
I didn't know that.
You're only allowed to play two 250s the whole year if you're a top 10 player. You can play a third one only if you play all the mandatory events.
Is it the same on the men's side, or
it's not? They don't have that rule on the men's. Like, you know, you can play as many 250s, really 500s as you want, and they have like some restrictions for the mandatories. But
yeah,
like,
the rule on the men's side, I think, is just like how they count points towards like your qualification for Turin. I think.
Yeah, it's like 18 points count towards that. So you want to be smart about how many 250s you play, but it's not like there's a max number, you know. Yeah. Like on the women's side, it's like capped at two, and then three if you play all the mandatories. But it's like that's what makes these 500 draws just so stacked. I mean, you have like top 20 players having to play qualies to get into a 500 draw. It's like, because they don't space them out so well, it's because like you have like two 500s back to back before the AO, and then you have like Abu Dhabi, and then you have like Doha, I think this week is another 500, and then you have Dubai 1000 after that. It's like just so many like 500s with such stacked fields. Like the first round feel like quarterfinals of slams. Like,
I mean, at this point, you kind of have to have like those 500s, right? Because a top 10 player, not saying that it's not really about a money question. Like, it could be, but like in the sense that it's, you get like a player and they lose in a round two. Like, the next time you're going to play a tournament, like, who knows when it's going to be, right? So, it could be just like really damaging for a player to, you know, get to top 10 and start losing matches, because it's like there's nothing you can do, you can't play anymore. So
yeah, it just doesn't feel like there's any easy draw whatsoever for any of the top players, like in these tournaments. It just feels like they can't really like bank on winning two or three matches, even if they're like one of the best. It feels, because like,
yeah,
like I mean Sakari already played Linz, now she only has one more chance basically, and she's one of the best players to have like not won a title since 2019, and now like
I was going to mention, Sakari, and it's another tournament that she entered that she should be winning. I thought her only real threat could maybe be Alicia Parks if she carried her form over, but I thought Parks would probably be quite tired after, you know, her title in Lyon the week before. And yeah, just another semi-final loss for Sakari. It's a shame, because I think everyone wants her to do well, because, you know, she struggles so much in the, you know, in the semis and the finals of these stages of tournaments, and it's another letdown. And yeah, as you said, one more 250 this year. You know, is she going to win a 500? Is she going to win 1,000? You know, there's a lot of competition, and it's not going to be easy for her.
Yeah, and yeah, the fact that she's not winning even those semifinals, like, it's just worrying for, like, how much mental strength does she have? Because, like, we know that the body strength is there. Like, there's probably nobody stronger than Sakari, even on both tours, like, at this point. But, like, is the mentality there? Like, because I watched a bit of her playing against Donna Vekic, which, by the way, I think that was her first win over Vekic in her career. And she almost blew.
Really had the better.
Yeah,
so, really had the better of her.
Yeah, so I mean,
that was an impressive win.
Yeah,
but it's like she could have finished that off in straights, because she served for the match.
Yeah,
and she like, but when she got behind, she's like a different player. I feel like when she gets
exactly,
behind,
you know,
her,
yeah. But you can't have that. You can let that happen, because like you're gonna lose, like, I don't know, 7 out of 10 matches you're behind. Like, if you're Djokovic, you can maximize that to like 5, but like still, like you want to win like 9 out of 10 times, like when you're ahead. that's where the goal lies. Like, and she just became so passive. She just like started rolling her forehand, almost like waiting for the error to come, and obviously didn't. Vekic just like saw that as an opportunity to just like rip some forehands like through the court, and it happened, and she almost lost the set. So I mean, Yeah, it was good that she ended up like winning that in straights, but I would have loved to see her winning it like 6-3, 6-4 instead of 6-3, 7-6 in like 12-10 in tiebreak or something like that. So,
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we got more. We obviously got a lot more WTA coming up before Indian Wells with these next two tournaments, and Iga will be back next week. Could have potentially Collins versus Iga, I think, in the the first match for Iga already. That would be a rematch of the Australian Open semis. And then I think, yeah, and then you have, I think, all the top players back. I think Sabalenka is not playing this week, but yeah, pretty much the rest of the field is. So I think,
I'm just really
yes,
excited for the
good
clay
week.
court still.
Yeah, I love the Golden Swing.
Oh yeah.
I
Oh, and of
love
course,
it.
Alcaraz is back this week. So
Exactly.
that's
Yeah.
gonna be
That
that's
have you
the
seen
name
the
I'm most
videos
excited
of
about.
all the fans kind of like trying to sneak a peek of his practices? It's
Yeah,
crazy. Like
it's nuts.
he's got such a huge draw over there, like crowd wise.
I hope
Amazing.
we get that Alcaraz Baez quarterfinal. I would love to see them play again.
Please, yes. I mean,
Yes.
them
Yeah.
US Open match was so good. Like, I just can't even imagine how good it'll be on clay, like a best of three maybe
Yeah.
type match. I would love to see it for sure.
Yeah, that's a pretty good field also there, because you have Norrie as the second seed. You have Musetti, who does really well in these clay tournaments, and then I think he's the third
Rude's
seed.
playing, is he? Or is he not? Rude's not
No, he's
playing.
not playing this.
Okay.
He's taking his off season right now. So,
Yeah.
About time.
but yeah, I think, and the fourth seed is Diego. So, yeah,
Yeah.
this is a pretty good field. Like it's,
Team, yeah.
yeah,
It's a
team as
really, really
well.
fun draw.
Yeah,
And yeah,
so yeah,
Baez has got
like
Ljubic, who's the sixth seed, which surprises me that Ljubic is seeded. But that's quite, I mean, that's quite a good first round for Baez, I think. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I think he'll win that. But yeah.
Team, I believe, is playing Molchan in the first round. That should be that's
Yeah.
not an easy first round. I think that's going to be quite.
It's gonna be tough. I think I'd be more worried if it was on a hard court because I, from what I've seen in March, and I think he can red line better on a hard court. But yeah, I've not seen team play since I think Bestad, where he lost in the quarters or second round to Baez, or maybe it's the semis. I can't remember now. But yeah, so then also he's been playing hard court since then. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what he brings, and if he wins that, he's got either Sosa or Varillas, I think, who pushed her out to five at the Australian Open. But I think he's the favorite for any of those matches,
I'd like to
personally.
see him and Musetti in the quarters. I think that would be fantastic.
That would be very fun. And that's the Owen's absolute dream matchup of
Oh yeah, he would love
two one-handed backhands. He's gonna
that.
love that.
Yes.
Yeah. I just
Beauty and
wanna see
grace.
a I just wanna see like a fairy godmother touch on team. He's like, here's your level back, like become who you were. That's it. Like, and all of a sudden he just starts tearing through like all the draws and like losing one or two games a match. Like this is what I want. Like it's just sad to see that guy like that. Like I feel like I don't even know like why he can do better. Like the forehand could be slightly better, but like all of a sudden it's
I
just
think
like
that's
his
the one thing. I think it's the forehand. I think because the backhand looks amazing. Like it's looked, the backhand still looks really good. The
The
it's
forehand just
like
kind of
it's
lost the
the
whip.
confidence. It's the confidence on the forehand. I think that's what's holding him back. Like,
Yeah, the serve could be better as well. I don't think he's hitting it as big as he used to. I mean, he's still. I've got it's such a shame that he got Rublev, his worst matchup in round one of Australian Open. You couldn't have asked him. I mean, yeah, he could have got Djokovic and he would have lost and probably would have like Tsitsipas as well. But like Rublev, matchup wise, is like historically team's like worst opponent, and he gets him in the first round, and like day conditions as well. It was just like
Yeah.
team had him at night, it might have been a bit different, but and then
And
team got
he suffered a
injured.
little bit of an injury in that match, yeah.
Yeah.
And
And you
then
could see it like
he
in
looked the
his
same.
serve dropped a lot of pace. And but I think he's healthy now. He obviously played Davis Cup, lost both his matches, but yeah, I think he'll be excited for the clay. Basically, all my favorite players just look forward to the clay, and then I just suffer for the rest of the season. Yeah, no, it should be a good week. I don't think we actually mentioned who won Linz, which was Anastasia
Oh
Potapova. Yeah.
yeah, good shout. No, I've seen her play before. She's won, this is her second title, I think, and she played a good match against Xinwen Zhang at the U.S. Open. It was like two tight tie breaks. She's one of the, she has really good firepower of both wings, and pretty solid ball striker, but I think she's
only 21 years old as well. So that's
another young player in that same crop. She's 31 in the world now, so that's
good stuff.
If she keeps this up, she'll be seeded for the next major. But
yeah,
and she beat Petra Martic in the final, who beat Sakkari in the semis. Yeah.
Very comfortably as well. Yeah, 3-1.
Yeah. Which is good signs, right? I mean, an experienced player like Martic. And she just kind of blew her off the court. So, I didn't really watch this match either. But, actually, this puts her on my radar. Shame on me that I didn't. So, I'll catch her in the next match.
Yeah, I'm not sure what she's playing this week, actually. Because we've got is it Doha this week?
Yeah.
Yeah, we got Doha, and then we got Rotterdam for the men, we got Buenos Aires for the men, we got Delray Beach for the men.
So much, actually, it's like outdoor, indoor, hardcore, clay.
Okay, at least it's only 4 events and not 5.
Yeah, true.
5 is overkill, I think.
Mm.
Even for the most hardcore tennis fans. Because they also schedule these finals almost all at the same time. And it's like, you have to kind of, like, either you wake up extra early or you, like, you have like 5 screens. It's like really
tough to
catch everything.
And days like yesterday, I actually would have had to book my entire day off to watch all these matches, because by the time that I think Isner at Dallas finished, the Cordoba final was starting. So it was just straight up like 6 hours of tennis, like right away, like 2 finals, and like add to that, like all the other ones. It's just like, which is it's good to catch up on those, but like, more tennis, yes, please. But like at the same time, it's like obviously I'm not going to be able to follow all of that. So
yeah,
that's the fun of it, though. I feel like you can just, like, anywhere you are in the world, I feel like you'll be able to catch something, and you'll miss some things, but then you'll sort of just catch up, or it'll like be in the back of your mind, and then like you won't be as shocked if they do something big in a major, or they'll be the top, because it's like in your radar somewhere in your brain. But like that's what we love about tennis so much, you know, the overload is one of those.
It's like a first week of a Grand Slam where it's like 14 matches like at the same time.
Chaos.
Yeah.
And then after the third round, it just kind of settles down, because it's like,
And by the way, Potapova is number 14 in the race, so I think she's in very good position to be seeded for Roland Garros. So,
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's the next target for all these, 50 to 25 players, is getting that seeding in for Roland Garros.
Yeah,
that's what I'm quite worried about Schwarzen, is that, I mean, if he doesn't do something amazing over the next 3 or 4 weeks, he's probably not going to be seeded for French Open unless he has a really good clay season in the build-up.
Yeah.
And that's going to be weird, Schwarzen not being seeded the French Open just seems wrong to me. Yeah. But I mean, there's still a long way to go.
Yeah.
Good win for Rebecca Marino. She just beat Pliskova and
qualifying. It's nuts. So the qualifying was a tournament in itself.
The Pliskova Fernandez, like, one of those is not going to be in the main draw. Like,
it's shocking.
The Wimbledon finalist and then the US Open finalist, the very next major. And they're playing for a spot in the main draw of a 500. It's just nuts. Yeah. I guess we could keep going on and on, but unfortunately, I do have to get going. I think you do.
Yeah, me too.
Getro, we've had you on for over an hour now, and it was a blast. We appreciate all your knowledge and your all the analysis you've given. And for sure, we'll do this again. And Getro, where can we follow you on Twitter and social media?
My Twitter is Getro_SB. You can just follow me there. My Instagram is not very interesting. I don't use it much. But it's the same username on there if you want to follow me. Thank you so much for having me on, guys. I've very much enjoyed this. Love talking about players that I follow a lot. And it's been really, really enjoyable.
Right. Thanks so much, Ethereum.
Yeah, cheers, the pleasure guys. Was ours. Thank you.
Right. See you guys. And also, you can follow us at VanchV2K, and I'm at Rollenberg Andre, I believe. I never remember what is my handle. And we are at Tennis and Bagels Official, do I want to say? Yeah. Man, what a season we had last year. But anyway, thanks guys for listening. And we have some big news coming soon. So keep up on our Twitter pages and Instagram pages, moving a bit more as well. It's also Tennis and Bagels in there as well. So if you want to follow us, more than welcome to chat with us on Twitter. I'm always there. So yeah, see you guys next time. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.